I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's November 24th, and we have a lot to talk about. We're just 2 days away from celebrating Thanksgiving in the United States, and I'll admit that for reasons that are all too clear, coming up with things we can be thankful for in the year 2020 is just a little more challenging than it's been in the past. But challenging isn't the same as impossible. So the first thing that I'm going to be thankful for this year is that we have two COVID-19 vaccines that hold real promise. And to put the efforts to successfully develop and test these vaccines into some sort of context, just consider the history of vaccine development. It took about a decade to develop the first flu vaccine, and it took almost 40 years before a chickenpox vaccine was available in the United States. So the unprecedented effort and resourcefulness demonstrated in developing these COVID-19 vaccines in a matter of months has been truly extraordinary. And that's something to be thankful for. If you're someone affected by MS, you might want to be thankful for the several new disease-modifying therapies that have been introduced this year. We know that each disease-modifying therapy affects each individual differently. So having a number of different options makes it much more likely that you and your neurologist are going to find one that's a perfect fit for you. And we're seeing that many of the newer disease-modifying therapies just seem to do their job better. And that means better patient outcomes, and that means a better quality of life. We can be thankful that with the introduction of the Pathways to Cures Research Roadmap, the National MS Society is focusing the research community's efforts on not only developing better treatments for MS, but developing cures that will stop progression, restore lost function, and end MS. This has been the year when I've heard the word cure used more often than ever before, and I think that's something to be very thankful for. I'm also thankful for the way that we're seeing advances in technology lead to better and faster science. Research is taking place at an unprecedented pace, and that means that we're closer than ever to game-changing breakthroughs, like identifying a biomarker that will allow doctors to diagnose MS from a blood test before someone even experiences any clinical symptoms. And that means that treatment can be started so early that that person may never experience any MS symptoms. Or using artificial intelligence to assist radiologists in reading an MRI, being able to see things that may be happening in our brain before they're even visible to the human eye. NASA is already using the same sort of technology to discover new worlds in distant outer space. It's exciting to think of the thousands of people who might never have to experience living with MS as we turn this technology inwardly on ourselves. On a personal note, I'm thankful that two of my hometown teams, the Los Angeles Lakers and the Los Angeles Dodgers, have reclaimed their places as champions of their respective sports. I'm thankful for witnessing countless examples of the resilience of the human spirit, sometimes under the most difficult circumstances imaginable. And I'm most thankful for each of you who choose to spend some of your time listening to Real Talk MS and connecting with me through your emails, tweets, and DMs. Each week, you've made our conversation the conversation that I look forward to most. Speaking of our conversation, I launched Real Talk MS because I thought that if I could explain some of the remarkable research that's taking place every day in laboratories around the world, if I could break some of that down into easy-to-understand language, some of you might feel as encouraged and hopeful about the future as I do. I saw a real benefit in trying to close or at least reduce the gap between the people doing the research and the people actually affected by MS. Well, it turns out, I wasn't the only one thinking about that. Brett Drummond was a scientist in Australia who was conducting some of that research, and he was also thinking about how explaining that research could help build a bridge between MS patients and MS researchers. The result is MS Translate, an outstanding online resource for the MS community. Brett and I connected this year at the MS Virtual 2020 conference, and after a couple of conversations, it became apparent that we shared the same perspective. Brett's going to be joining me as my guest today to talk about how a researcher steps out of the lab and into the task of bringing the research community and the patient community closer together. But before we get to my conversation with Brett Drummond, there are a few other things that you should know about. An international team of researchers has successfully created myelin-producing cells in a lab dish in just 3 weeks. The myelin-producing cells, called oligodendrocytes, were created from stem cells taken from human donors, including four people with MS and ALS. And the research team went on to demonstrate that when they transplanted these oligodendrocytes into the brains of mice that lacked myelin and a functioning immune system, transplanted oligodendrocytes successfully produced myelin. Now, this is a point where I remind you that there's literally a big difference between a mouse brain and a human brain. And there's a lot more work ahead to determine whether this may at some point evolve into a viable remyelination therapy. On the other hand, this research was accomplished using human stem cells, and on its face, I think it's encouraging news. If you'd like to review the details of the study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. A research team from the University of Washington Department of Rehabilitation Medicine and Department of Neurology has published the results of a web-based survey that was created to understand how people living with MS in the United States experienced distress and perceived their COVID-19-related risk during the first surge of the pandemic. And after analyzing the 491 responses to their survey, the research team concluded that the level of distress among people living with MS was only marginally elevated above the levels of depression and anxiety that people living with MS typically live with, even when there isn't a global pandemic to worry about. As other studies have also indicated, this may have a lot to do with the level of resilience that people living with MS demonstrate every day. The research team found that anxiety was slightly more elevated and prevalent than depression, but both conditions were associated with being younger, more intolerant of uncertainty, less optimistic, lonelier, and less resilient. What's particularly interesting about these survey results is that among people living with MS, it was their coping skills and not the status of their disability or their overall disease status that determined their level of distress. And the good news here is that coping skills can be taught and further developed. Now, Thanksgiving is the traditional start of the holiday season, and the holiday season can always add additional stress to our lives. This year, more than most, we can pretty much count on that. So please look at the resources that are available to you online for learning relaxation exercises, mindfulness meditation, and add tools and techniques like these to your self-care toolbox. They can make all the difference in your well-being and quality of life as we work our way through a COVID holiday season. Reliably measuring MS progression requires a visit to the clinic. And those visits may only happen once or twice a year. But what if there was a reliable way to monitor MS progression by measuring something that most people already do every day, like typing on their smartphone, for instance? Well, that's what the results of a small study seem to indicate. The study was done by Neurocast, a Dutch company that's focused on transforming everyday digital interactions into approved, objective, and unobtrusive measures of disease activity. And Neurocast owns the app that collected the typing data that was used in this study. A person's typing pattern, or keystroke dynamics, are unique. So how quickly or slowly you might type, The amount of time between each letter typed and the number of mistakes made and corrected while you're typing combined to present a measure of neurological status. And looked at over time, changes in those keystroke dynamics may be predictive of changes in neurological condition. It's an interesting hypothesis that will require larger studies to confirm, but it represents a future where changes in neurological status of people living with MS may be unobtrusively measured as people simply live their lives every day. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. When we think about and talk about clinical trials for MS disease-modifying therapies, we tend to focus our attention on the outcome of current trials testing the newest drugs for their safety and efficacy. But it's worth remembering that there's valuable information that past clinical trials can also reveal, specifically because a number of years have elapsed since that actual clinical trial. And so researchers from the pharmaceutical company Biogen worked with researchers from the University of California, San Diego, to review some of the data from the clinical trial for Avonex. One of the things that was measured at the beginning of the Avonex Phase 3 clinical trial was the level of neurofilament light chain in each of the clinical trial participants. A neurofilament light chain is a protein usually only found in nerve cells, but as MS causes a progressive degeneration of nerve cells, neurofilament light chain is released into the blood and cerebrospinal fluid. And researchers were able to record the neurofilament light chain levels for 308 of the clinical trial participants. Now, researchers also did MRI imaging to record the number of lesions and the total volume of each participant's brain. And when the research team followed up and analyzed some of this data, they discovered that the level of neurofilament light chain at the time of the trial participant's first MS episode was predictive of brain atrophy or loss of brain volume 5 years later and even 10 years later. In other words, the clinical trial participants with the highest levels of neurofilament light chain at the very beginning of the Avonex Phase 3 clinical trial lost the most brain volume 5 and 10 years after those original measurements had been taken. The research team also discovered that the people with higher neurofilament light chain levels were also most likely to have the greatest number of lesions 5 and 10 years later. As we've discussed in previous podcast episodes, there's a tremendous amount of scientific interest in qualifying neurofilament light chain as a biomarker for MS, and even as a biomarker for MS progression. And just a quick reminder, a biomarker is a characteristic that can be objectively measured and evaluated as an indicator of either normal or abnormal biological processes. For instance, if you go to your doctor because you're running a fever, your doctor might do a blood test. And if the results of the blood test indicate that your white cell count is high, your doctor will tell you that you have an infection. That high white cell count is a biomarker for infection. And these new study results may be one more piece of evidence in support of neurofilament light chain as a reliable biomarker for MS and MS progression. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. In producing each episode of Real Talk MS, one of my goals is to break down the science to make it more easily understandable to a non-scientific audience. I believe that achieving that understanding creates hope and brings the people affected by MS and the people doing the MS research closer together. And as the patient voice is increasingly being recognized as a necessary and important component of research study design, bringing these two groups together also becomes increasingly important. What surprised me a couple of months ago is finding someone in Australia who sees things in exactly the same way. In a moment, we'll meet my guest, the co-founder of MS Translate, Brett Drummond. One of the reasons that I started this podcast was because I wanted to bridge the gap between the MS research community and the MS patient and caregiver community. Well, during the recent MS Virtual 2020 conference, I met up with someone who shares quite a similar vision. My guest today is Brett Drummond, the co-founder of MS Translate, an independent, curated multiple sclerosis information resource. On their website, MS Translate describes itself as being dedicated to bridging the gap between the MS research community and the MS community, establishing new connections, and keeping people living with MS up to date and informed on developments in research and treatments. Welcome to the podcast, Brett.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Full disclosure, Brett and I have had a couple of conversations since MS Virtual 2020. And I have to admit that it's a bit of a strange feeling for me to hear someone else express some of the very same thoughts that are on my mind. But I also have to admit, I think that Brett's Australian accent makes those thoughts sound so much better when he expresses them.
I was wondering whether or not I was going to have to, as part of my introduction, say that I was calling in from Australia, but I think the accent does give that away slightly.
It literally speaks for itself. So, Brett, I started by giving a really brief description of MS Translate, and I'm hoping you can give us a proper, more complete description of what MS Translate is and what motivated you to create it.
Yeah, certainly, John. And once again, thank you for the opportunity. And as you said, we've had a number of discussions before this. And what's really stood out, I think, to both of us is that we have very similar goals and very similar mindsets in terms of why we're doing the things that we're doing. But I guess what's differed slightly is our paths to get here and our motivations for doing this. So my background is actually in multiple sclerosis research. I did that for many years and what seems like a bit of a lifetime ago. But what I really noticed during my times of doing research was that as a researcher, we were very focused on the 30 centimeters of bench space in front of our nose. And what was really lacking was a connection between the people doing the research and the people who were directly impacted by the research that we were doing. And it just so happened that while I was working in the research lab in the early hours of the morning, I was having lots of conversations with my brother, Eric, who is the other co-founder of MS Translate, who was living in the United Kingdom at the time. So the time difference worked out nicely to be able to talk when I was working those hours. And his background is in web and social media. And we started talking about how we might be able to work together when he came back to Australia. And really the idea of MS Translate was born, which at its core is, as you say, to provide independent, accurate, up-to-date, easily accessible, but most importantly, easy to understand summaries of multiple sclerosis research, which for me, I think is really important for a number of reasons and probably highlights my motivation for wanting to be in this field. One, I think that there is a real necessity that we get the information about the research that's going on out of the lab and to the people who are impacted by it. But I actually think it's really important that that's done in a responsible and accurate way. And while the internet is fantastic for doing a lot of the things that we want to do, the problem is that anyone can post on the internet. And you and I have already had discussions before about, you know, articles that we will see online regularly that probably misrepresent the science that's going on and the research that's going on into multiple sclerosis. So what we try and do is we obviously make sure that using my research background and also my science communication background, that all of the articles that we write and the research that we talk about is presented in the most accurate way that it can be.
I think you started answering this question already, but what do you see as the upside of bridging the research and patient communities? What do you think that does for each?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. And probably when we started, the initial goal was very much around informing and engaging the MS community. And to make sure that the people living with MS and their families and their carers and the people around them were getting access to high quality information, because you know we always think that information is power, and so but to be able to understand what's going on in the research world, but to have a trusted resource to be able to go to do it, and no other trusted resources. We've never thought that MS Translate needs to be that sole resource for people. And one of the reasons why it's such a fantastic opportunity to connect with RealTalk MS is to encourage people who follow MS Translate to also listen to this podcast. So that was one motivation. But I also think that there are huge gains for the MS research community by having closer connections with people living with MS and with the MS community. And we often do across MS Translate live Q&As where researchers will come and talk about their research and answer questions from the MS community. And often the feedback that we get after that from researchers is how much they've learned from the conversation. So while many people might think that this is primarily about providing information to people living with MS, that conversation is actually two ways. And having giving researchers the opportunity to have that connection, to learn more about what the lived experience is like for people living with MS, find out things that they're interested in and things that they need, is really important. And that actually helps to define research areas, to generate new research questions, and also to really accelerate and progress research in the right direction, I think.
If I remember correctly, you launched MS Translate back in 2012. So now that you're 8 years into it, what changes have you seen in either the MS research community, the patient community, or both?
Yeah, a lot, I think, is the short answer to that. Things have changed greatly across the 8 years that we've been doing MS Translate. In terms of the MS community, I think that their thirst for knowledge has grown even more, and it was huge to begin with. But I think more and more they've become engaged with the research, and they've probably got a better appreciation for how they actually can influence the research direction that's going on. And through being engaged, through interacting with researchers, through using their voice. And I know this is a topic that we talked about when we did your interview on MS Translate, because you are obviously someone who is the epitome of what can be achieved if you stand up and use your voice and try and create change, has led them to want to be even more involved in this space. And I think as well as that, they now have more of an appreciation for understanding that not everything that they read online can be classed as legitimate, and they're much more savvy about that. And so they will pick up things that are posted online and bring it to our attention and say, this article is out there. Is this really what's happening? So I think that's been one change. And certainly in terms of research directions that we're looking at now, there are huge new ones that we weren't even thinking about necessarily back in 2012. The gut microbiome, for example, I know that when I was doing research, which is a bit before 2012, but coming to the end of it around then, it wasn't something that we were really talking about hugely. We knew it existed. But what we've learned about that in the past 8 years in terms of all of the effects that the gut microbiome can have just in general, but then how it might be involved in disease and the roles it might be playing in multiple sclerosis, and how it can maybe be manipulated to be used as a novel potential therapeutic approach. I mean, these are things that we weren't even really talking about. HSCT has come a long way in terms of being a potential new therapy that can, for some people living with MS, maybe a really viable long-term option. Yeah, things are changing all the time. I mean, just from last year, things have changed this year, let alone thinking about back to 8 years ago.
I think one of the things that I've noticed, and I'm wondering if you kind of see the same thing, is that the pace of research advancing has really accelerated over the last several years.
Yeah, I would agree with that as well. And I think part of that is that there is more research going on around the world. I would also say that there's more collaborative research going on around the world. And I think this is probably a good opportunity to give a bit of a shout out to organizations like the International Progressive MS Alliance that you're involved in. Because organizations like that who can help navigate these areas and push for change. And I guess progressive MS is, again, something that we've seen more focus going into over the past 8 years, which was certainly overdue again, this is something that we talked about a lot in your interview. And so I think that's helping to drive research forward. And there has been, while it is still incredibly difficult for researchers to access funding, And we could have a whole separate episode talking about the difficulties that exist in that area. You know, I think we are seeing that worldwide, generally, there is a more significant approach going towards trying to help researchers in this area. I also think that part of it is that we are getting more communications around it as well. So while there would have been a lot of research going on in the past, we probably didn't hear about it as much as we do now. And I think that's important as well, is that that gap is starting to be bridged, that both you and I are really passionate about, that we are seeing more and more coverage and promotion of the fantastic work that's being done around the world.
Well, you mentioned a couple of research areas that exist today that didn't just a few years ago, things like the gut microbiome, things like HSCT cell therapy. I'm wondering, since we both connected at MS Virtual 2020, looking ahead a little bit into the future, what did you find were some of the more interesting research presentations made at the conference?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot, and it was certainly a very novel experience to be attending the conference from the comfort of my own living room, as opposed to traveling to Europe, which, as you appreciate, from Australia is quite a long flight to be able to get there to Stockholm last year. We were traveling for about 24 hours. But there was, I think, what's interesting in terms of the presentations, just to give a bit of an overview first, is that the breadth and depth of presentations that we heard at MS Virtual 2020 this year was huge. There are so many different areas that are being looked into now that weren't being looked into previously. I think one of the really interesting things for me, and there was a number of presentations around it, and this followed on, I think, from last year where we started to hear about it as well, is that there's more research going on now into symptomatic treatment of multiple sclerosis. I think there has been a recognition from the MS research community that while it is fantastic to look for disease-modifying therapies and we need ways of being able to improve things for people living with MS in that area, that at the same time, we need to be finding ways to deal with symptoms that people are dealing with on a daily basis that are having a huge impact on their quality of life. So, you know, we saw presentations around how cognitive behavioral therapy, for example, exercise may be beneficial for the treatment of fatigue. And we know that fatigue is a symptom that, you know, almost all people living with multiple sclerosis will report, and many will report it as being the symptom that has the biggest impact on their quality of life. So, you know, I think having research that's specifically targeting something like that, that hopefully may be able to have a really direct impact on people's lives in the near future is fantastic. I think the talk on bexarotene, the remyelination trial, was really interesting, both in terms of the results that they presented and also the way that it was covered online. Because so this actually came out online before the presentation itself at the conference due to a little press event beforehand. And so this was a remyelination trial. You know, remyelination, I think, is one of the things that we're most excited about in the MS research community moving forward as the next step for really being able to effectively treat multiple sclerosis. And so this trial, while it failed, in essence, it didn't quite meet its primary goals, and there were a number of safety concerns associated with the treatment itself, so they won't be continuing with that compound. And what they did see was that, one, they got a much better understanding of how to run a remyelination trial, which is really important, and two, they also showed that the class of compounds that they're interested in and the target that they were looking at does work in terms of being able to actually promote myelin repair. And so that's really exciting. It certainly then leads to new avenues and things for them to be pursuing. And yeah, I think remyelination is an area that we'll be very excited about over the next few years, and hopefully start to see some late stage positive trials within the next 5 years.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that study in particular, because as you pointed out, it didn't meet its endpoints. It formally is labeled failure. But I don't know that enough people always appreciate that when clinical research fails, there are still gains to be made in that failure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, and that's from a number of perspectives, I think a failure, even that's a pure failure, is really important because that that tells us about an avenue that we no longer need to necessarily look down. And also, one, that means that we can learn something about the disease from that, and that tells us something about the underlying processes that maybe we didn't know. But also, it's important that we do provide coverage of that so that other researchers around the world aren't necessarily wasting their time continuing to chase something that may not be effective. But yeah, as I said, in this case, while the trial was a failure, there was a lot that we could learn to inform future trials.
You know, it's been a few years since you took a step back from the laboratory, and I'm wondering whether you miss it and whether you think you'll find your way back.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I do miss parts of it. There is something very unique about working in research in terms of the almost high that you get for when you do discover something and when you get those positive results, because often those positive results are coming after months and months of work leading up to that final experiment. And so when you do that and you get the results and it shows something interesting, there is a thrill to that. And I think researchers are all united in a similar way to, I guess, what we talked about with the MS community. There is that thirst for knowledge. And for me, one of the things that drew me to multiple sclerosis research is that it is such a complicated disease. We look at other diseases where we can quite easily detect, this is the cause and this is the outcome. But with multiple sclerosis, I mean, we know that genetics are involved. We know that there are environmental factors involved. How they all work together is still a mystery. You know, we could take two people who, for all intents and purposes, look identical when they're diagnosed, but then one person will progress really quickly and another person may remain quite healthy for the next 30 years. All of these things that seem very unique to multiple sclerosis, I think, from someone who has a brain that likes to solve puzzles and gets intrigued by these things, that really appeals. And so I do miss that part of research. I don't miss the frustrations that come with it. We've talked about this before and you've seen it through working with researchers at the Progressive MS Alliance as well, is that understanding what researchers go through and the dedication that they have and the passion for what they do, the difficulties they face, they experience the ups and downs as well in a very different way to how people living with MS experience the daily ups and downs, and not to try and, compare those experiences. But, there is a lot about that. So I'm not sure that I'll ever make my way back into the research lab, but I love what I'm doing now because it lets me have both aspects of it. I can talk to the MS community and talk to people living with MS, but I still feel very engaged in the research that's going on. I mean, I get to talk to researchers, I get to ask them questions. That part of my brain still ticks over, and I still, many nights, especially because of all of the research papers that I'm reading, many nights I'm lying awake trying to put together those pieces of the puzzle. So while I'm not in the lab necessarily doing the research, that part of my brain is still firing all the time, and I think that's, that provides a really nice balance for me.
So tell us, where can people find MS Translate?
Yeah, so you can find MS Translate in most social media platforms and online. So you can go to our website, which contains all of the unique content that we generate, and that's at www.mstranslate.com.au. You can also find us on Facebook, just MS Translate. So it's just capital MS and then lowercase translate. It's got nothing to do with Microsoft, which we often hear people think it's some translating program for Microsoft. It's not that. We're trying to translate research from complicated language into easy to understand language. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, LinkedIn, all of those places.
Since I now know that you're up nights thinking about these things, what do you think is next for MS Translate?
It would be a shorter answer to probably tell you what's not coming up next for MS Translate. I think the thing with us is that we're never short of ideas. And so there's lots of things that we want to do. I think it's safe to say through our conversations that we're both really hopeful that what's next for MS Translate will involve more working together with yourself and Real Talk MS, because I think using our platforms to be able to work together and spread the word more about MS research and provide different perspectives and open up avenues like that is certainly something that we're very excited about. you know, continuing to listen to the needs of the MS community. We'll always be guided by the feedback that we get from people living with MS in terms of what they want to be hearing about, how they want to be hearing about it, who they want to be connecting with. We have a lot of plans as to how we can better promote research and help researchers moving forward as well. And I think that's probably going to be over the next 12 months part of the goal for what we do, because obviously with 2020 being a very different year to what any of us have experienced before with the coronavirus pandemic. I mean, we touched on the problems associated with research funding earlier, but I think, you know, with the economic issues that are going to have, that will have arisen from this year, that will impact on research funding. There's no doubt that it will. And, you know, I think that multiple sclerosis research will also take an impact from that. So trying to work with researchers to help them through that process and find ways to maybe help them continue their research, better connect with the MS community and things like that is certainly something we'll be doing. Probably making some announcements around that towards the end of this year, but really getting into early next year.
Well, I'm obviously a fan of the work that you're doing at MS Translate. I think it's an amazing resource, and I'm looking forward to finding things that MS Translate and Real Talk MS can work on together to make it really easy for the Real Talk MS community to find it. I'll be adding a link to MS Translate in today's show notes. Brett Drummond, thanks for all the great work that you do to make MS research accessible and to more closely align the MS research and MS patient communities. And thanks for talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks very much, Sean. And that feeling, as I said, is very much mutual. And just in closing, it would be remiss of me to say that MS Translate couldn't be done without the other half of MS Translate, Eric. So just to give him a little bit of a shout out at the end, while I'm often the one putting my face on things and my voice behind things, he does a lot of work behind the scenes as well to make MS Translate as successful as it is as well. So I can't thank him enough. But it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And yeah, I'm really excited about all the things that we might be able to do together in the future.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/169. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. I don't think that I have to tell anyone listening to this podcast that the COVID-19 pandemic has intensified and in some cases multiplied the challenges of living with MS. More than ever before, people living with MS need access to reliable information, support, and connection. We're witnessing that even during a pandemic, MS doesn't stop, and neither does the National MS Society. With vital funding from supporters like you, the National MS Society is continuing to meet the urgent and expanding needs of the MS community during these unprecedented times, while ensuring that the MS research community rebounds quickly from COVID-19 so that the progress and momentum toward finding a cure continues. And that's why I hope that, as you're able, you'll make a donation to the Society's COVID-19 Response Fund. It couldn't be easier. Just text the word GIVE to 68686, and you'll get a link right to the MS Society's COVID-19 Response Fund webpage. I hope you'll consider contributing today, because it's never been more important. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Have a safe Thanksgiving, and make healthy choices.